This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Jesus had a stunning ministry full of miracles and teaching. People came from far and wide to hear him speak or to see a miracle. The other religious leaders wanted to discredit him, but Jesus' teaching revealed their heart. Today, Pastor Sam will continue a sermon titled, Jonah, Jesus, and Me. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Let's make sure we have the context. I want you to keep your finger here in Luke 11, and I want you to flip over to Matthew 12, and I want you to see. We've read Luke 11 together, so let's go back to Matthew 12, and I just want you to see the setup. And while you're turning there, let me remind you that in Matthew chapter 4, at the end of Matthew 4, Jesus has been baptized, he's been tempted, he's called the disciples together, and he begins his ministry in the northern part of Israel, around the lake that you know as the Sea of Galilee. All around that lake are villages. There were more than 200 villages and cities that dotted the upper part of Israel, the northern part of Israel, that was called Galilee of the Gentiles. Because the Galilee, that part of the area, was a very wonderful part. It was sort of like, you know, if there was a state park in Israel, it would have been located up in that area. And people went up there to be refreshed. And so Herod had brought Rome into that area. He built massive Gentile cities all around that area. And Jesus had been going up and down in those cities announcing the gospel of the kingdom. In other words, he, the king, had arrived in his own house. This was David's land. This was the land God gave to Abraham. And Jesus had arrived, and when he arrived, he found that the people had been lacerated by an enemy. The enemy was Satan. He had led the people into darkness. He had destroyed their hearts. He had brought them into bondage. He had afflicted them even through demonic activity. And Jesus was going up and down in that region. And Matthew says he was healing all of their diseases. And Jesus didn't just do mighty miracles to display his power. He gave mighty words to unfold his mission and his message. And you know those words. It's a Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus was done preaching, the scripture says, the people were astonished. They were amazed because he spoke to them as one having authority. This was a wonderful moment in the redemptive history of God's people. The chapter in that story that opened with the arrival of the champion that all of God's people had been waiting for since Genesis 3. He was here. He was declaring it openly. He was validating it through miracles. And the people were astonished at the gracious, wonderful miracles and the wonderful message of his words. But not everybody was happy. And you know what's coming next. The people that were most unhappy were the religious leaders of the day, because they had been particularly hard hit by the emphasis Jesus put on Micah 6:8 in his ministry. Remember Micah 6:8? God has told you, O man, what is good. And so what is the good? What is the tov that God is looking for out of you and out of me? To do justly, to love what? Mercy, and to walk humbly. Can we say that together? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. Those three things. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. And by the time that Jesus is done, it is very clear as he looks at these religious leaders that he is confronting them with the very hard truth that they are not doing justly in spite of all of their outward righteousness and the fastidiousness, even going down to paying tithes on the most minute of spices they would buy in the synagogue. They were not doing justly. And by the way that they handled and despised people who were unclean and ritually impure, and the way they were so angry at Jesus when he actually healed a man whose arm was withered They didn't love mercy. They weren't compassionate at all. And because they desired the chief seats in the synagogue and they loved when people met them and said, oh, this is Rabbi so-and-so, they weren't walking humbly. And so Jesus is going to expose all of this in their own heart. And they were furious at the thought of a carpenter-turned-rabbi coming and speaking to them in this way. But they were at a loss to explain the incredible miracles that he kept doing. And so when we get into Matthew chapter 12, he has just had a very powerful, miraculous display where he heals a man who was demon-possessed, who was both mute and blind. And this miracle was so notable, it was so unusual, that the people began to ask the question, could this be the Son of David? They're looking at Jesus coming out of Nazareth, a rabbi, and he's teaching like nobody's ever taught before. He's kind, he's gracious, and he does these amazing miracles. And then here in their midst is this most astonishing of miracles, and the people are beginning to come to the right conclusion. Surely this one is the champion. Surely this one is the Son of David. And the Pharisees realize, we have to do something about this. We have to give them an alternative explanation for all of these miracles. And so they began to speak as teachers of the law. And they began to say, now let me give you, really, you folks don't understand this, but let me give you the real secret to the power of this man's miracles. You want to know how he does the miracles? He is in league with the prince of demons. That's what the word Beelzebul means. Jesus is doing what he is doing by the finger of the prince of demons. The idea of by the finger is the idea of the source of power. You remember in Pharaoh's day, Moses would come in and do miracles, and then the magicians would do the miracles as well. And then they finally got to a miracle that Moses was able to do, and when the magicians weren't able to replicate that miracle, they looked at Pharaoh and they said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh, there's only one explanation for this. That man Moses is doing what he's doing by the finger of God. That's in the book of Exodus, chapter 8. And that's what Jesus is talking about here when he refutes these Pharisees. They have come right into his midst and they've observed what he's doing. And they've seen these notable miracles, and they're beginning to realize these people are starting to conclude something that we can't afford to let them conclude. And so we've got to give them an alternative explanation. And so here's how he's doing all those miracles. He is in league with the prince of demons, and he is doing all that he's doing by the power that the prince of demons gives to him. This is blasphemy, really, of the highest order. Isn't it? And that's why Jesus looks at these leaders and he says, when you blaspheme in this way, you blaspheme not against me, you blaspheme against the Spirit of God that is on me. That's the whole reason in that chapter he quotes Isaiah and the Spirit of God being on him. And so here is this undeniable miracle. And as soon as he's done doing that, he goes into their synagogue and he does another miracle. There's a man whose hand is completely withered up and it's been that way since birth. And the Pharisees say, now what are you going to do about this? It's the Sabbath day. You can't heal on the Sabbath day. And Jesus says, well, let me ask you a question. Have you not read? What happens when a man has a sheep who falls into a ditch on the Sabbath day? And everybody knew what happened when a man's sheep, his source of livelihood, fell into a ditch on the Sabbath day. You went in and you pulled that sheep out. And Jesus looks at these Pharisees and he says, isn't a man worth more than a sheep? And then he said, now, what do the priests do on the Sabbath day? Aren't they violating The Sabbath day, when they slaughter an animal and they burn it, somebody has to make a fire. Aren't they breaking the Sabbath day? Don't they profane the Sabbath day as priests? And the answer is, of course they do, but they're priests. This is the point of temple worship. And so Jesus is looking at these men, and he is rebuking them, and he is exposing something about them that was true in an earlier prophet named Jonah. They have a very different heart than God's. They lack compassion. Jesus said, do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. And so Jesus looks at these men and he rebukes them. And after the rebuke, they come to Jesus and they demand a sign. So if you're really who you say you are, then give us a sign. And you want to step back and say, are you kidding me? He's already been giving you signs. How many more signs do you want? I mean, he's healed people. He's opened blind eyes. He caused lame people to walk. You guys were there when they opened up the roof and they let that guy down in. He walked on water. I mean, he's even raised the dead. How many more signs do you want? And so Jesus looks at this generation that is demanding a sign, and he says to them, the only sign that is going to be given to you is the sign of the prophet Jonah. And so that brings us to three important things that I want us to understand about that sign so that we don't miss the lesson that God has for us as we listen in to the lesson that he's trying to give to these religious leaders. And so maybe the first way we can understand this is to sort of divide up these three big ideas around three personalities that are in our story. There's Jonah. So let's start with Jonah, the sign. And I would suggest that maybe we could look at Jonah and sum it up this way. Mercy resisted. Mercy resisted. And in Matthew 12 and in Luke 11, Jesus is coming along and he is saying to them, here's your sign. You want a sign? Here's your sign. It's Jonah. Now, of all of the Old Testament prophets, why did he pick Jonah? Now, remember where he was. He was in Galilee, and right where he was about a 4-mile, 5-mile walk to the city of Nazareth where he was raised. The prophet Jonah came from a little village called Gath-Hepher. Gath-Hepher is Nazareth. Remember where Jesus was coming out of Nazareth and somebody said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? The idea was Nazareth is a nothing town. And out of that nothing town had come a prophet named Jonah. And Jonah had been sent to Gentiles. Outcasts, wicked, immoral people. Jesus had been sent to outcasts, to wicked, immoral people. And Jonah had a big problem with that. Jonah was like, this is morally and theologically nonsensical. How can you morally take the kind of mercy that you're talking about and give it to people who have done that? And the Pharisees were constantly coming to Jesus' disciples, or they were coming to Jesus himself, and they were saying, how can you do that? How can you hang out with him? How can you hang out with her? What in the world are you doing around those kinds of people? Those are the kinds of people that don't deserve God's mercy. You should be hanging out with us. You should be elevating us. You should be kind of joining in on our thing, but instead you're hanging out with prostitutes. You're hanging out with lepers. You're hanging out with unclean people. This is morally and theologically unsustainable. And beyond that, you're actually wanting to take this kingdom bit that you're announcing and you're wanting to give it to Gentiles. In fact, in Nazareth, you actually told people there in Nazareth, because we heard all about what you said in Nazareth. You actually told people in Nazareth that there was many widows in Israel, but there was one widow in Zarephath that God sent mercy to. And there were many lepers in Israel, but there was one pagan leper named Naaman, and God had mercy on him. And don't think we missed what you were saying by that. You are actually theologically out of line. And isn't this the point Jonah was making all these 8 centuries early? God, if you're taking mercy to the Ninevites, you are morally out of line and you are theologically out of line. This is exactly what was going on in the heart of these Pharisees, which is why Jesus said, you want a sign, I'm going to give you one. His name is Jonah. And you're just like him. Like Jonah, they were willful sinners in desperate need of mercy, but they didn't even know it. And Jonah says, now remember my book when I was writing you my story? I wrote you 4 chapters, and we got to the very end, and I kind of looked at you, and we looked back on my story, and I said to you, you know, the person in the book that needed the most mercy was not the sailors. The person in the book that had the hardest heart was not the Ninevites. Remember when we were talking about this? This is Jonah talking to us. Remember when we were talking about my story? The person that needed the most mercy in the book was me. And by the way, it may be that that's where you and I are. The people who need the most mercy, the person who needs the most mercy is often me. And that's really hard to embrace, isn't it? Because it means that we have to look and come to assess ourselves properly. Like Jonah, they were spiritual leaders who should have understood God's plan. Right in Matthew 12, and again in Luke 11, Jesus is going to refer to Old Testament scriptures that make clear that this kingdom that he came to announce was for the Jew, but it was also for the Gentile. And they had a huge problem with that. They couldn't see that they were opposed on, as we said earlier, moral and theological grounds. How could God extend people mercy like that? And Jesus, how can you go around breaking the very laws that we teach people have to be obeyed? I mean, look at your disciples. They're running through the field on the Sabbath day of all days, and they're picking grain. They're harvesting. And they're breaking the law. And Jesus said, well, haven't you read what David did when he was hungry on the Sabbath day? And got real quiet. And look at you, Jesus. You walk right into the synagogue, the place of worship, on the Sabbath day. And when you should have been praising God and listening to the Torah and listening to one of us explain it to you, you're over here messing with some dude with a withered hand. He's had that hand forever. And surely you could wait till the proper time to heal that withered hand. It's not like he's going to figure out, oh boy, another day with the withered hand. He's had that withered hand forever. And Jesus said, now wait a minute. He's not a sheep. He's an image bearer. And if you wouldn't look at a sheep and leave him in the ditch and say to the man, look, I know he might die there, but it's a Sabbath day, so you know what? If you die, you die, but don't touch the sheep. You bring the sheep right up. And these Pharisees are looking at Jesus and going, you are not just teaching theological inaccuracy, you're actually a lawbreaker. You're breaking the Sabbath. And Jesus looked at them and he said, I want you to know something. The Sabbath was made for man, not the other way around. God didn't create the Sabbath and say, no, I got to create some people to keep it. He created image bearers, and the Sabbath was supposed to be a gift to them. You've turned it into a burden that they can't even bear. And that's true today. You know, I was just over there in Israel. I hope we can go as a church in the very near future. But one of the things that happens in Israel at sundown on Friday, the entire country shuts down, or at least the religious cities in the country shut down. I've been in Jerusalem on the Sabbath, and it's empty. It's quiet. The stores are shut. I've been over at Joppa on the Sabbath, and everything's open because this is a port city full of people that are like somewhat Gentile-y in their component, and they don't really give a rip about the Sabbath. But in the city of Israel, everybody cares about the Sabbath. You know what you can't do on the Sabbath if you're in a hotel? You can't ride an elevator on Sabbath day. Too bad if you're on the 14th floor. Because if you punch a button, You're creating a spark, which means you're making a fire, which is against the Sabbath day. So how am I going to get around that if I'm an Orthodox law-keeping Jew? And the answer is, I'm going to create a Shabbat elevator. And you know what the Shabbat elevator does? It stops on every floor. Too bad if you're on the 21st floor. You got 21 stops. You ever been there? I mean, it's amazing. If you are an observant Sabbath day Jew, you cannot turn on or turn off the lights in your house on the Sabbath day because you're creating a current which might create a spark which is making a fire. But you can hire a Gentile to come in and turn on your lights and turn off your lights for you. Or you can put him on a timer. If you have a car, you can't turn your car on. So in the city of Jerusalem, there are Gentiles who have a side gig. And their side gig is, on the Sabbath day, they make extra money starting people's cars. Because they're Gentiles. You're going to hell anyway, so go ahead and start my car. I'm not. I'm going to be Torah observant, so I'll drive the car that you started. And when you're burning in the fires of hell for this, I'll be righteously indignant. I'm putting a lot of words in people's mouths. That's really not how they would look at it. But in essence, that's the religious leaders in Jesus' day. We're looking at the Sabbath, and here is someone whose entire life has been affected, and God's merciful heart said, I want to heal you. Like Jonah, they were resisting God's will, and they were disobeying God's word, and they were rejecting God's mercy. And God says to them, you want a sign? I'll send you a sign. I'll send you the kind of sign I sent Nineveh. I sent Jonah to Nineveh, and I sent Jesus to you. And that's the second thing I want us to see. It's not just Jonah, mercy resisted. It's Jesus, mercy extended. In what sense is Jonah a sign? Jonah appears in the most wicked city on the planet of his day. He shows up, and it's like he came out of nowhere. And when he got there, he started talking about a God that everybody had heard of. Every Ninevite had heard the stories of what this God had done to Pharaoh and to Pharaoh's armies. Every Ninevite had heard about this God and what he had done to the Canaanites. In fact, by the time Jonah comes, there have already been Ninevite armies. There have already been Assyrian armies that have come into the northern kingdom to bring tribute or to pay or to extract tribute for them. So they knew about Jonah's God. And all of a sudden comes this man, this prophet, in the middle of their city announcing a message from God. And all of a sudden, in the cities of Capernaum and Jerusalem, comes another greater prophet who appears, and he has a message for them from God. And it's a very similar message. Repent, lest you likewise what? Perish. Jesus becomes the sign. He said, the only sign that will be given you is the sign of God, of Jonah. Just like God sent Jonah to Nineveh, God has sent me to this generation. It's interesting that Jonah performed no miracle in Nineveh. There's no record of Jonah ever doing a miraculous sign in Nineveh. He himself was the sign. And here is Jesus who did something Jonah didn't do. He did miraculous miracles, and these people come back to him, and they still demand more. We don't believe you give us a bigger and better sign. And Jesus looks at them, and he says, the biggest sign that God has ever given you is me. I am your sign.
Thanks, Pastor Sam. We'll conclude this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for teaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for our worship service at 9:30 every Sunday morning, or connect with us online at pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is produced by the audio team at Palmetto Baptist Church. Also by Ryan Ahrens and C.J. Billiou. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.